So when you think of all of us, you know, sharing the Dharma together this evening, if you think of us just doing it, you know, like it's any old thing, does it have a different feeling than if you think of us sharing the Dharma, but we all have the same motivation? So we're all going in the same direction. And the direction we're going in is one that's worthwhile. And what is it that makes the direction we're going in worthwhile? Because our mind is very expansive, caring for all living beings, and seeking the highest awakening for their benefit. And so with that mind, let's share the Dharma this evening. Okay, so we're on the section called Three Possibilities, right? Which actually isn't three possibilities. Always, sometimes it's two possibilities. So I'm not sure why it's called Three Possibilities. Mostly, merely labeled, incorrectly labeled Three Possibilities. Okay. So, Three Possibilities might be more literally translated as three corners. In this case, there are usually three things to point to in the discussion of the comparison. However, this is one of the two comparisons for which the debaters make a difference between one, the case of three possibilities for which there is something outside the two circles, that is neither a P nor a Q, or two, the case of three possibilities for which there is nothing outside the two circles, that is neither a P nor a Q. In the second case, there is not a third thing to point to. So there's really only two points, whether they call it three points or not. Crazy. In both these cases, as represented in the diagram above, there is a unidirectional pervasion between the two. For whatever is a P is necessarily a Q. But whatever is a Q is not necessarily a P. That is, if something is one, then it is not necessarily the other in one direction between P and Q, but not in both directions. Okay, as is the case of two things that are mutually inclusive. There's not something that is one that is not the other, if they're mutually inclusive. I don't think there's... Yeah. No, but he said, whatever is a P is necessarily a Q, but whatever is a Q is not necessarily a P. But that doesn't apply to things that are mutually inclusive. Because whatever is a P is a Q, and whatever is a Q is a P for mutually inclusive. Oh, I see what he's saying. Yeah, okay, so it is in both directions, right? Okay. So this fact is represented by the smaller circle, P, being wholly included within the perimeter of the larger circle, Q. There is something inside the smaller circle that is both a P and a Q, and there is something inside the larger circle, but outside the smaller, that is a Q but not a P. Be aware that the relative size of the circles may or may not be proportional. They may or may not represent the relative extension of the two principles being considered. So the size of the circles has nothing to do with how many things are in it. What is being shown is the larger circle includes at least one phenomena, the smaller does not. Okay, so three possibilities, including something that is neither. So, answer and debate. There are three possibilities between P and Q. Okay, so this is the more typical, so that first part, what I just read, is pretty clear. People understand that, right? This is the more typical case of three possibilities. And here, there is something that is both a P and a Q. Something that is a Q, but not a P. Something that is neither a P nor a Q. For example, this is the comparison between sounds and impermanent phenomena. Okay, every sound is impermanent, for it lasts only a short while. But not every impermanent phenomena is a sound. For instance, a car is impermanent, but it is not a sound. Okay? So what's in the center of the two circles is something that is both a sound and an impermanent phenomena, like the sound of thunder. Okay? So whatever is a sound is necessarily an impermanent phenomena, but whatever is an impermanent phenomenon is not necessarily a sound. So, for instance, where the number 2 is in the bigger circle but not in the smaller circle, okay, that's something that is an impermanent phenomena but not a sound, like a car. Okay, then 3, so something that's outside both the small circle and the big circle, is something that is outside of the circles of sound and impermanent phenomena, like a permanent phenomena, which is an existent but not impermanent. Okay? We all together? Okay. It is helpful to see these points displayed in a checklist. The table below has 3 columns, impermanent phenomena, sounds, and subjects. I think calling it subjects is, that's confusing, because the word subject often means the perceiver, you know? So I would just call it item. Yeah, example or item or something like that, okay? So there are 3 rows, 1 for each of the 3 possibilities. The topics, or the items, are given in the right column, and under the heading of impermanent phenomena and sounds, checks and X's represent respectively whether the subject is or is not an example of that phenomena. Okay, so is the chart clear how that works? The table shows that the sound of thunder is both an impermanent phenomena and a sound, and a car is an impermanent phenomena, but not a sound. And a permanent phenomena is neither an impermanent phenomena nor a sound. Okay. So then exercise 4.1, have you done this with your partners? Now, I have a question in here. The one that says women and human mothers. Is it 3 possibilities? How many possibilities is it? Mm-mm. 4. Okay, so let's go through. What is a woman and a human mother? Queen Elizabeth. Okay. How about your mom? Okay, Phyllis. Okay, who's a woman, but not a human mother? Okay, you. What is a human mother, but not a woman? What is a human? Is there something that is a human mother, but not a woman? Yeah, there's a trans man, you know, who grew beard and everything, then decided that he wanted to have a child. He was already in a relationship, stopped taking the testosterone, got pregnant, and there was a picture of him in the newspaper. So he is a human mother, but not a woman. No, because there are many women who are not capable of giving birth. Oh, now you're going to get legal here. You're going to get into trouble. No. I mean, if a person considers themselves a man, do we consider them a man? Even if they started out as a woman? Are you getting in this? We're getting into the bathroom debate.
My issue is not with the woman, it's with the human mother, because by the time he was a parent, he was, even if he is a woman still, he's a human father.
So he's a. So then you're saying he's a father.
But
So the
maybe,
father gave birth.
well, I think that when they gave birth, they might have still been a woman.
No, they not.
Because they still had all of their parts, right? But then by the time that they were
No.
actually a parent.
No, they were the picture I saw. I mean, it looked like a man,
Right, but what
but
about l the part they didn't show in a picture?
yeah, though that part, yeah.
Yeah, thank
But
you.
if we're accepting when people say that they are a man, if we're accepting that they are a man, then it's a man who's having a child. So you're saying, I was thinking of it as a man who is a human mother, but you're saying it's a man who's a human father. You're thinking, but then you're going to get into trouble with the bathroom thing. No, their DNA is both double X. If you're saying it's a woman, the DNA is double
Yeah,
X.
that's what I meant.
Okay. But then you're saying that even if she becomes a he, she still has to use the woman's bathroom.
Well, she can use whatever bathroom she wants.
But you're calling her a she, even though she's calling herself a he. He's calling himself a he. So, yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah, he's saying it's a woman that's a father, and I'm saying it's a man that's a mother, and somebody else is saying it's a man that's a father. But nobody's saying it's a woman that's a mother. Is there? You're saying it's a woman that's a mother?
I would say it's a woman that's a mother
So you
if
think
it,
she should use that it's a she, she's a she and she should use the feminine, the women's bathroom? Go live in Texas.
I don't know. I don't know. She can call herself whatever, but if she's a mother, then she must be female. If she have given birth, that is female. That's not a male trait.
Well, it seems it might be.
I'd say she's biologically a woman and socially a
Anyway, what
man.
I'm getting at is, okay, what I'm getting at here is that, how this one is a little bit tricky, okay? Because we're supposed to be able to say there's nothing that is a human mother but not a woman. But we're, some of us are saying there is something that's a human mother, that there is someone who's a human mother, but not a woman.
I can think of another example of someone that might not be a woman that could be a human mother. And that would be if you're defining woman by being an adult. And there's people that have had babies quite young.
When they are 13.
Yeah, but then someone
That's,
else might
yeah.
define woman or even adult as being sexually mature. In some societies, that would be considered a woman.
That's very true. So it could be, yeah, somebody in a society where they get married quite young and she's 12 or 13 and has a child and her body is wrecked, basically. Okay, that's another example. So this one is not so clear cut, is it? Okay. So is the narrative, does somebody want to do an example, two people? Can I have two volunteers to do an example between what? Between Dharma Center and a place where Dharma is taught.
Okay, how do the two compare? Dharma centers and places where Dharma is taught.
There are three possibilities between Dharma centers and places where the Dharma is taught.
It follows that there are not three possibilities between Dharma centers and places where Dharma is taught. Give an example of something that's both a Dharma center and places that Dharma is taught.
There is something, the subject Amitabha Buddhist Center in Singapore.
Now, which way does the pervasion go?
Whatever is a Dharma center is necessarily a place where the Dharma is taught, but it's not the case that whatever is a place where the Dharma is taught is necessarily a Dharma center.
Give an example of something that is a place where the Dharma is taught but is not a Dharma center.
There is something, the subject, the monastery Shravasti Abbey.
Give an example of something that is neither a place where the Dharma is taught or a Dharma center.
There is something, the subject, the Unitarian Universalist Church in Spokane.
Yeah,
that's true. I forget that. Oh, I'm wrong. The Spokane Mosque?
Yeah, that's a good.
Very good.
For one thing, it doesn't check to make sure there's a fourth possibility, not a fourth possibility.
Yeah.
It doesn't say, is there somewhere that's a Dharma center where the Dharma is not taught? To make sure.
Say that again.
It doesn't ask if there's somewhere that's a Dharma center, but the Dharma is not taught.
Mm-hmm. No.
It doesn't ask that. But then you may have a Dharma center, and you may say that's not Dharma they're teaching there, not in that particular.
No, they're. Oh yeah, we should be able to see that.
It doesn't ask if there is a P that is not a Q to make. Well, but that's what I'm saying. It doesn't check to make sure this is not four possibilities by asking that question. Then, if it was four possibilities, you've never checked that question and you've decided it's three possibilities.
But wait a minute, hold on. There's something that is both. There's something that's a Dharma center, but not, is there something that's a Dharma center, but is not a place where the Dharma is taught? Yeah, something that's a Dharma. Yeah, because see here, it's not going through all four possibilities and seeing.
Right, and that's what I'm wondering is, does that leave a hole where you may be comparing something and you may decide it's three possibilities, because you haven't checked to see if there's a fourth possibility.
Yeah. But wait a minute, let's go through this again. Something that is both a Dharma center and a place where Dharma is taught, Amitabha Buddhist Center. Okay? Something that is a Dharma center but is not a place where Buddhism is taught, where the Dharma is taught. That's a good example. A Dharma center that didn't open yet. Or somebody could say, you know, there's nothing, but it could be. Is there something that is a place where Buddhism is taught but is not a Dharma center? Yes, Shravasti Abbey. Is there a place that's neither? Yes. Okay. So that's why I prefer going through all four and seeing all four. Because he's right. Well, it was assumed in the debate, that the debaters already checked that. But, you know, there could be a situation where it's not really suitable to make that assumption. And you need to check. Well, no, we were thinking of what is a Dharma center is a small circle, and the big circle is where the Dharma is taught. But with the example of a Dharma center that isn't open yet, then it can't, the diagram can't be that way. It has to be one with two circles where there's an overlap. Okay? Okay. No, what he was saying is we didn't check that fourth possibility in the debate. Yeah, that's what he's saying. Yeah.
We're answering three possibilities and assuming that's right, is what
right.
I'm saying.
Right, yeah. When you actually need to check all four, what do you mean there may be some that don't work? Then they don't fall under three possibilities. Then they don't fall under this model. They fall under another one.
Right, and he said just keep note of that for the future.
Right, so that's what we're doing. Yeah, because we did find an example of something that is what, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you get at that the answer to that question when you say, which way does the pervasion go? Because if there wasn't a pervasion, then you would say it then. There's no pervasion, there is four possibilities. So you do end up answering all four of those questions.
Yeah, so, yeah, so then it would be up to one, the person, if somebody said there's three possibilities, then it would be actually up to the other person to say you're wrong. There's four possibilities. Yeah. But it's interesting how, I mean, when I gave the example, yeah, I was assuming something. Yeah. And I think everybody else had that assumption. And so we didn't bother to check that fourth one. But that would actually be your role in the debate, yeah, to see when she said there's three possibilities for you to quickly go blah, 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 and is that correct or not?
Yeah. Seems like it comes out through the conversation.
Yeah. Okay, somebody want to think of another example? Oh, yeah. Okay, shapes and visible objects.
How do the two compare? Shapes, P, shapes, and Q, physical objects.
Yeah, don't use P and Q. Just
no.
Say
how do shapes and physical objects compare?
There are three possibilities between shapes and visible objects.
It follows that there are not three possibilities between shapes and visible objects. Give an example of something that is both a shape and a visible object.
There is something... The item, a football?
The football is not a shape, it's an object.
Yeah. Isn't the football a shape?
Elliptical, no. Circular, square.
Football is not a shape.
Okay.
It has a shape. It is not a shape.
All right. Then I think I'm hooped in this example already.
Mm-hmm. Keep going. You got to give another
example. There's something, the subject, a circle.
Mm-hmm. Now, which way does the pervasion go?
Whatever is a shape is necessarily a visible object, but is not the case that whatever is a visible object is necessarily a shape.
Give an example of something that is a visible object but not a shape.
A football.
Okay. There is something.
No, actually, that's not a good example. Blue, the color of the football.
There is something, the color of the football.
Yeah, that's a visible object.
That is
but
a visible
not a
object
shape.
And not a shape.
Yeah, they categorize footballs as tangible objects.
They do.
Okay, then give an example of something that is neither a shape or a visible object.
There is something, the smell of baking bread. The smell of baking bread.
Okay. Yeah. Now, is there something that is a shape that is not a visible object?
Something in the dark.
Something in the dark? That you could have a football in the dark.
Yeah. Couldn't you also have a shape in the dark?
Yeah. What about the shape that you feel with your fingers? Can you feel a circle with your fingers? Is shape exclusively a visible object, or can it also be a tactile object? Exactly. Yeah, it's defined as a visible object.
But you can figure that out by touching it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, but it's defined as a visible object. But I don't think that's correct, because you can tell the shape of something without seeing it, without it being a visible object, but by something that is a tactile object. According to how they're categorizing it, no. According to how we think, yes. But they have a way, they have an idea why they categorize things the way they do. The same way it gets very confusing here. Is the football an object of sight, or is it an object of touch? Now, sometimes what they'll do is they'll say whatever sense perceives it most strongly. So some people may say it's an object of it's a visual object, you know. But then other people may say it's made of the four elements. The four elements are all tactile objects, so it must be a tactile object. Another way, this is where I don't know Dharmakirti's philosophy that well, but I do know the way the Gelugs interpret Dharmakirti is different from how many other people interpret it, different scholars and so on. But it seems to me that a football is an object that is conceived, that it's a conceptual object based on seeing a color and a shape and feeling the four elements, that based on all of that you have the idea of football. But the Galupas don't like to go in that direction. They want to have it one or the other. But I think there are some people who may say that those things are conceptual objects. But then that gets difficult with Dharmakirti's philosophy, because then you would have to say a football is not an object of direct perception. It's only an object of conception. And no, they don't want to say that. You know, they want to be able to say it's an object of direct perception, which means you have to categorize it either as a visible object or as a tactile object.
So if I was going to throw an object to you, mm-hmm. you can see it. It's a visible object. I can't see it. It's a tactile object to me at the same moment. If it's behind my head, like I'm going to throw it like a football?
No, but right. We would say that object, you know, it doesn't, it being visible object or not visible object doesn't depend on you as a person perceiving it. Yeah, there's trees in the forest that I don't perceive. It doesn't mean they're non-existent. I don't perceive them right now. Doesn't mean they're non-existent. It doesn't mean they're not trees. It doesn't mean they're not visible objects. It doesn't mean they're not tactile objects. Just because me as one individual is not directly perceiving them at this moment.
Then they can be both not dependent on someone's certain sense.
Well, this is what I'm saying. The Gelupas don't like to say that. People don't like to. It's too ambiguous to say it's both. So they classify it. They say, for this system, you make certain rules. So either you accept their rules or you debate their rules. So you're debating the rules. Okay? And I see sense for debating the rules. But if you're going to follow the system, then you have to say, well, okay, a football is a tactile object. Or maybe you say, we all agree to call football a visible object because, you know, I don't know. What do football players say? Do they think of it as a football primarily as something you hold in your hands or primarily something you see? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, the quarterback, it's tactile so. Because he hasn't thrown. He's going to throw it. He's not looking at it. But yeah. The receivers are looking at it.
Yeah. So, yes.
Is this where we would use that word pedagogical? This is just a pedagogical tool that we either accept or don't accept.
Yeah.
And it's used for the purpose of sharpening the mind.
Yeah.
And it may not satisfy all our doubts. And
right. But I think it's fair to debate the rules, too, because, you know, it brings out other dimensions of things if you also debate the rules. Yeah? Because it makes you really think, what is a football? Yeah? Do you directly perceive a football? You know? Now, even according to the Prasangikas, do you have direct perception of a football? Or on the basis of seeing different colors and different shapes, you give it the name football. So does that mean that whenever you perceive a football, it's not a direct perception, it's a conceptual consciousness? That would feel really uncomfortable. Yeah? But in another way, don't you take all that raw physical data and your mind make it into a football? So in that way, isn't a football an object of, it's not, it wouldn't be an object of a direct perceiver, if you think about it that way. But yeah, but it needs it, that what is the object of direct perception is the color and shape or the tactile things. That's what's really the object of direct perception. But the football is conceptual, according to how we're looking at it, which makes a lot of sense. But to say that you can't have a direct perception of a football sounds very uncomfortable conventionally. Yeah, that sounds very uncomfortable, doesn't it? Yeah. Because in the same way we say, I see Venerable Tarpa. Am I seeing Venerable Tarpa? I'm seeing Venerable Tarpa's body. I'm actually seeing the color and shape of her body. But I say I see Venerable Tarpa as if Venerable Tarpa were an object of visual consciousness. Yeah? Is she a form? Because only forms are objects of sense consciousnesses. So if I say, I see Venerable Tarpa, is she a form? Yeah, if she's a form, which form is she? Forms are inanimate objects. Is inanimate objects. Is she an inanimate object? So, you know, technically speaking, you can't say, I see the person. You have to say, I see the body. But even within that, I see the color and shape, and I impute that as a body. And dependent on seeing the body, I impute the person. But, you know, it's like that draws us so far away from our common conventional way of speaking. And the philosophical systems don't want to do that too much. Yeah, because then it sounds like, you know, I saw Venerable Tarpa, then they would say, oh, you know, you're out of your mind, you can't see her. She's an abstract composite, she's a person. Persons are abstract composites, only forms are things that you can see. You can't see abstract composites, you know, so you're crazy. How can you say you saw her? Yeah. So then philosophy and common language cease to meet, in which case philosophy becomes really dumb. You know, you can't apply it to anything then. Okay. Let me give you a few other things so we don't stick to the text exactly the whole session. So some things came up with our BBC today, okay? So let's go through the 4 points, or how many points are there between being someone who is lonely and someone who practices the Dharma? Okay, is there? Yeah, how many possibilities are there? 4. Okay, who's somebody that is lonely and practices the Dharma? You're lonely? How can you be lonely? Are you lonely? Really? You have 4 cats. Four cats and all your nun friends. Okay. Is there somebody who is lonely? Huh? You're especially talented. Oh, okay. That you can be lonely with all these animals and everything. Okay. Are you really lonely, or are you cutting yourself off from others? Or are the two synonymous? How about that? Maybe we should do those 4 points first. Okay, what are the 4 points between someone who's lonely and somebody who's cutting themselves off from others? Is there something that's both someone who's lonely and somebody who's cutting themselves off from others? Yes. Is there somebody who is lonely who is not cutting themselves off from others?
Someone whose significant others just died, they might feel lonely because that person's gone, but they're not cutting themselves off from other friends or family. It's just their grief makes them lonely.
Huh. So the absence of one person makes somebody lonely. That's interesting. Yeah. But do people agree with that? Can the absence of one person make you lonely?
Could indicate you are cutting yourself off from others, because your strategy is that one person is going to fulfill that, and you're cutting yourself off from the others that might fulfill your need.
Yeah, but she's saying you could miss that one person but still be involved with all the other people.
Oh, if that person's been like your other half for 30, 40 years, and then that person dies, you might feel lonely, but then still be accepting support from your family, or not be cutting yourself off from them, but still feel lonely because it's like my other half's gone.
It really makes a difference if you're cutting yourself off emotionally or physically from others. Because you're cutting yourself off emotionally, then it's fairly easy to be surrounded by others but still be lonely.
Right.
But if you're cutting yourself off physically, then you're cutting yourself off physically and you're lonely.
No, you can cut yourself off physically without being lonely.
And within the realms of the example of a significant other dying.
Yeah. Well, two people are saying very different things. One is saying, you can... you're lonely because the person you relied on for 45 years is gone, but you're not cutting yourself off for others because you still have your family and friends and you're seeing them. And he's saying, but you are actually cutting yourself off from your family and friends and these other people because you're not bonding with them, because your mind is so stuck on the other person. So we have two different definitions here going. No, hers is also emotional, because she's saying she's seeing the possibility of being emotionally involved with people, with other people, but missing the person who died. Grieving the person who died, missing that person. And he's saying, if you're that much in your grief that you feel lonely, then you are cutting yourself off from others. So then we have a debate about that. So maybe, yeah.
I believe an example of a person that could feel lonely but is not cutting themselves off from others would be, for example, a person who survived a plane crash, or perhaps a feral child who was raised isolated from civilization.
So the first one was a person who survived a plane crash.
Yes, a sole survivor.
The soul, and they feel lonely.
Yes, because they would be completely by themselves.
But no, somebody rescues them and then they're surrounded by other people. Do you think they feel lonely after they get rescued?
No.
Would you feel lonely after you get rescued from a...
There could be another example would be, it was a phenomenon called holdouts.
The what?
It was a phenomenon called holdouts. It was Japanese soldiers after World War II who did not know that the war ended.
Yeah.
And they kept on fighting 20, 30 years after. And some of them were completely alone. And they did not intentionally cut themselves off. They had no idea that the war had ended.
But were they do you think they were lonely?
I do believe so.
Okay. They were lonely, but they were not cutting themselves off from others. Anyway, okay, can we go back to the four between someone who's lonely and someone who practices the Dharma? So we found somebody who's both, okay? Somebody who is lonely but does not practice the Dharma. It's sometimes difficult to find examples that we all agree on, isn't it? Yeah? Yeah, yeah. But you see how so much of our contemporary language, it's sometimes really amazing that we ever communicate. Because you can see in this kind of thing, you know, someone thinks that person is lonely, someone says they're not, someone, you know, we have such different opinions. Okay, let's go the other way. Is there somebody who's a Dharma practitioner who is not lonely? Yeah, I think His Holiness is a better example. Okay, yeah. Because remember, lonely doesn't have anything to do with how many people are around you. Yeah. Is there somebody who's neither lonely nor a Dharma practitioner? Yeah, with their mom and dad looking at them. Yeah, okay. Okay, let me give you another one here. Okay, what are the four between the four points between something that is illegal and something that you think it's okay to do? Okay. Is there something that is both illegal and something that you think is okay to do? What? Speed! In the car. Yeah. Okay. Okay, a few miles over the speed limit. Is it illegal?
Somebody has a trap line and I find a coyote in it and release it, that's illegal.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I'd be breaking the law a lot. Yeah, what are other examples or things that are illegal that you think are okay to do? I think jaywalk. Oh, yes. Yeah, that I knew she would say that. When you've lived in India long enough, then...
Washington, D.C.
Yes.
No.
Okay. Helping an illegal immigrant. Yeah. Okay. Like housing an illegal immigrant. Yeah. Is there something that you think is okay to do that is not illegal?
Not jaywalking.
Okay, reciting mantra. Something that is illegal, that is illegal, that we think is not okay to do. Okay, yes, yeah, so killing is an example of that. Okay, and then something that's neither illegal nor something we think it's okay to do. Capital punishment, that is something, what was our thing? That is not illegal and it's not something. Okay, capital punishment in a certain state, we would have to say. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, raising animals, killing them for food. Something that's not illegal, but we think is not okay. Okay, let's make it a little bit more complicated. Something that is, what are the four? Between something that is illegal and something that you think is okay to do, but you don't do it because it's illegal. Okay, so what is something that is illegal and you think is okay to do, but you don't do it because it is illegal? In other words, you don't want to get caught and face the good. Okay. Okay, so maybe speeding 5 miles above the speed limit. What about? No. No, we want something that is illegal. Yeah. Yeah, well, which one would that one be? Yeah. But do your taxes all go to war funds? No, you can write on your check. I always used to write on my check, use for social services only. Yeah. Okay, so is there something that is, wait a minute, did we do both? Yeah, we did both. So something that is illegal that we think is okay to do, but we won't do because it is illegal. So something that's illegal, but something that we think is okay to do, but we don't do because it is illegal. Yeah, that's a good example. Okay, so what is something that we think is okay to do, but we don't do because it's legal, but is not illegal? Yeah, there's nothing in that one. Right, right. Okay, and what is something that is neither illegal nor something that you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it's illegal? No, something that is not, no, we're doing the neither, right? Something that is not illegal, so something that's going to be legal, but something that you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it is illegal. Again, there's nothing because it would have to be something that is both legal and illegal, and there's nothing that is that. No, we just did that. It's not illegal, and it's not something that we think is okay to do, but don't do because it's illegal. Oh, yeah, so that is different. Yeah.
So okay. That's where I said water bowls, because it's not illegal, and it's not something I don't do because it's illegal.
No, this is something you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it is illegal. Yeah, water bowls would fit in that.
But it's not that.
Offering water bowls. Because water bowls it's not illegal to offer water bowls. And offering water bowls is not, it's not something we think is okay to do, but we don't do because it's illegal. No, it's this one negative that's going through both. It's So you got to first, you have to think something that you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it's illegal. And then something that's not that. Okay. So what's something that you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it's illegal? Yeah. What was it? Okay, wearing shoes in the kitchen. So something that is kitchen. Yeah. So something, it's confusing, isn't it? But this is what gets us to think, you know?
For me, it seems like you're comparing two things. And if you take the second half, something that you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it's illegal, when you add the not to that,
yeah,
to me, it only goes to changing it to something that I was doing that I thought was okay to now something that I don't think is okay. And it doesn't change the legality of it. Because to me,
well, it's,
that's
yeah,
a qualifier, and that qualifier doesn't get changed in the way I understand this.
Okay.
So that's...
Well, no, I'm taking the whole class.
You're changing both.
This is why sometimes you see he puts brackets around things.
Right, yeah. Oh, you're... Right.
Yeah. So first you take the class of something you think is okay to do, but you don't do because it's illegal, like working in the kitchen barefoot.
Right.
And then something that is not that.
Right, but not the whole thing.
Not the whole thing.
You're saying that changes like it
working,
into being legal.
Like working.
That's what the part that's hard for me to understand, because that part is a qualifier. Anyway.
No. The dot is just something that is not, for example, like working in the kitchen without shoes. So that could be, you know, something you think is okay to do, but you won't do because it's illegal. So something that is not that.
So something that's not in that category.
Yeah. Anyway, should we go on to something easier? Okay. Let's see if this one's easier for you. Okay. What are the four... between the four points, between an ultimate truth and something that conventionally exists. Okay. Is there something that is both an ultimate truth and conventionally exists? Yes. For example, emptiness. Is there something that is an ultimate truth that does not conventionally exist? No. Is there something that conventionally exists that is not an ultimate truth? The gong. Is there something that is neither an ultimate truth nor something that conventionally exists?
Non-existent.
Yeah, rabbit's horn. Okay. So do you understand why there is a common locus between ultimate truth and something that conventionally exists? Huh? Why there is? Common locus means there's something that's both those. Yeah? So we understand why emptiness is an ultimate truth. Yeah? Do we understand why emptiness exists conventionally? Yeah.
Because that's the only kind of existence there is.
There is, yeah. So it's tempting to think, oh, emptiness is an ultimate truth that must ultimately exist, but nothing ultimately exists. Conventional existence is the only kind of existence there is. Okay, now let's switch it. What's the four between emptiness, no, between empty and existent? Is there something that is both empty and existent? Empty of inherent existence, that's what I mean, that kind of empty. Okay, so that book is empty and it's existent. Is there something that is empty but not existent? What?
Horns of a Rabbit is empty of inherent existence, but it doesn't exist.
Right. Is there something that is existent that is not empty? No. Is there something that is neither empty nor existent? No, there's nothing in that one either. Okay, yeah, only two. Now let's switch the first one. Instead of saying empty and existent, say emptiness and existence. Is there something that is both emptiness and existent? Yes, for example.
Unfortunately, not an example. Are we doing existence or existent?
Existent.
Okay.
Yeah. What is something that is both an emptiness and existent? Is there such a thing?
The elements.
The elements are not emptiness. The elements are empty, but they're not emptiness.
The emptiness of emptiness.
Yeah, or the emptiness of the computer. We're looking for something that is an emptiness and existent. So the emptiness of the computer, the emptiness of emptiness, the emptiness of the wall, the emptiness of the person, they're all emptinesses, and all those emptinesses exist.
Would the emptiness of non-existent exist?
Okay, wait, let's hold on. Okay, then, is there something that exists, you know, that is not an emptiness? For example, the cushion. Okay. Is there something that is neither an existent nor an emptiness? The horns of a rabbit. Okay. So, are you okay?
The question was, is the emptiness of the horns of a rabbit existent?
No. That's an example of something that is not an emptiness and not existent. The emptiness of the horns of a rabbit is not an emptiness, and it also doesn't exist. Do you understand why it's not an emptiness? How come the rabbit's horns are empty, but they're not an emptiness? How come the rabbit's horns are empty, but the emptiness of the rabbit's horns is not an emptiness?
Emptiness of anything is an existent, so that can't be a non-existent.
The emptiness of a rabbit's horn exists?
So emptiness is the emptiness of inherent existence. Mm-hmm. So by its own definition, it requires an existent. And so the horns of a rabbit are a non-existent. So how can they be empty of inherent existence?
Yeah. That's not exactly the reason, but it is the right conclusion. Okay? Yeah. Does the emptiness of a rabbit's horn exist? We already said a rabbit's horn is empty. Does the emptiness of a rabbit's horn exist? No. Why not? The reason is because to have an emptiness, it has to be an emptiness of something that does exist. It's not that, you know, emptiness exists or doesn't. It's to have the emptiness of something, that object has to be an existent. Yeah, you can have the emptiness of the table, but you can't have the emptiness of a turtle's mustache, because the turtle's mustache doesn't exist. Yeah? Okay. The turtle's mustache is empty, but the emptiness of the turtle's mustache does not exist. It's empty because if somebody says, is a turtle's mustache inherently existent? You say no. Because it's not inherently existent.
In this system, selflessness is the largest category, which includes existence and non-existence.
Right.
So even non-existence are selfless.
Are they selfless, but they are not a selflessness.
Yes. Right.
Okay. So in the Heart Sutra, you know, we say form is empty, but we can't say form is emptiness. Sometimes it's mistranslated to form as emptiness. It's form is empty. But form is not an emptiness. But then they say emptiness is form. Actually, on the debate ground, you can't say emptiness is form. You would have to say, you know, that's not the literal meaning of it. Okay? Because emptiness isn't form, is it? Form is a visible object. Emptiness isn't. Okay, let's do the white horse. This may make it easier for you. What are the 4 points? Yeah, this is the first one they give the six-year-olds. What are the 4 points between horse and white? Is there something that is both a horse and white? What? Oh! Okay, is there something that is both a horse and white? The color of a white horse? Is the color of a white horse a horse? No, so that doesn't fulfill that. Is there something that is both a horse and white? Why doesn't a white horse fulfill it? Why isn't a white horse both a horse and white? Yeah, because a white horse is not a color. Why isn't it a color? Because it's a person. Okay. Are there any privations? What about the 4 points between a person and a color? Is there anything that is both a person and a color? No, a person that is white in color is not a color. Person that is white in color is a person.
Flat Stanley? He's a character in a book, but he's still a person, and he's one color.
Doesn't matter. There's person and color. There's no common locus. There's nothing that is both.
But really, he's just a piece of paper.
Yeah. Yeah, then he's not a person, and he's not a color. Okay. So these things could be a little bit tricky here. Should we go back to the text? What? Yeah, person and color. And horse and white are mutually exclusive. Person and color are mutually exclusive. Because you can't have a person that's a color. Yeah, wouldn't it? Yeah. Persons and colors are mutually exclusive. What is one cannot be the other. Okay, so we've gone beyond mothers and fathers. We can't agree on that. We should ask that person, you know. Are you? He'll say that he's a man, but will he say he's a mother or will he say he's a father after he gives birth? Dad. Yeah? Yeah? That kid will have two dads. Okay. Okay, so make up some more examples of pairs. We did that one. That will fit into that. Okay, three possibilities without anything that is neither. Okay, so there are three possibilities between P and Q without anything that is neither. Okay, so in the less frequent case of free possibilities, yeah, one, this is only two possibilities, but there is something that is both a P and a Q. Okay, it is the case that there is a privation in one direction, but not the other. So whatever is a P is necessarily a Q, but whatever is a Q is not necessarily a P. So there is something that is a Q, but not a P. And three, there's nothing you can point to that is neither a P nor a Q. Okay, so this is the way that selfless P and you can define whichever one you want to as P and Q. It depends how you draw it.
Yes.
Oh, but in the drawing, yes. Yeah. So selfless should be
Q drawing work.
And existence should be.
Yeah, you have to make the. To have the drawing work, you have to have the selfless be Q and existence be P.
Yeah, the selfless is the bigger circle. That's the point. Okay. Yeah. So the broadest, so we've found a typo. The broadest, this is what I never want in any of my books. I also found another typo later on. Yeah, did you find that one too? Yeah. Okay. So the broadest, that's why you have to proofread everything so many times. Yeah? The broadest possible category in the Buddhist theory of what exists is called the selfless. Okay? It refers to all that is free of permanent, unitary, partless self. Actually, it could also refer to everything that is not inherently existent. That's how I prefer to call it. The Buddhists say that everything that exists is free of or lacks or is empty of such a self. This is so, they say, because such a self simply does not exist. They also point out that non-existence too are free of such a self. Of course, it has to be so, for non-existence would have no self of any sort. Yeah. You may find it helpful to think of this category as everything that exists as well as everything that does not exist, or that which may be referred to. Okay, so you can see in the diagram, one is something. Oh, he has it backwards here too. Yeah, one is something that is. Well, it is both existent and selfless, like a chair. Okay. So whatever is an existent is necessarily selfless. Yeah. But whatever is selfless is not necessarily existent. For example, a unicorn or weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Yeah, huh? Sky flower. Yeah, I won't get too political here, but it's tempting. Huh? Yeah. Dreamers that are not Americans. Okay, are both existent and selfless. Yeah. Okay, so whatever is an existent is necessarily selfless, but whatever is selfless is not necessarily an existent. For example, we just said, you know, sky flower. Okay. And there's no possible example of something that is neither selfless nor non-existent. Something that is neither selfless nor existent. Yeah, there's no example of that. Okay? So actually, there's only 2 points.
Isn't verifying that there's nothing outside the circle a point, even if there's nothing outside the circle?
No, there. It's just here we're looking for things where we can find an example. Yeah, and we can only find 2 points where we can find examples. Yeah. Okay. So we'll just read this part here. The subject of the selfless and the description of the nature of existent phenomena as well as non-existence will be taken up in the presentation of Buddhist ontology or the theory of what exists in Chapter 9. This type of comparison, three possibilities without an example of something that is neither, happens rarely. It has to be a comparison of two existents that together take in every existent and every non-existent as well. It cannot be between something such as object and knowledge and non-existence. Okay? Because we cannot compare non-existence to anything because non-existence doesn't exist. Okay, so this rare comparison is noted as a separate case because even though it is called three possibilities, there is no possibility of something that does not have the quality of P and also does not have the quality of Q. There is no third point to hit, which is pretty odd for three possibilities of any sort. I agree. Remember, in this context, possibility does not mean something that exists. Rather, it means something that either has or does not have the qualities of the two phenomena being compared. The description of this sort of comparison as three possibilities seems to suggest that the heart of such a comparison is that there is something that is both and that there is a relationship of pervasion in one direction but not in both directions. Okay? So, shall we do one example, go a little bit longer? Do we have two debaters? Okay. So, debate the thing of something that is either existent or non-existent. That's one thing. And chairs.
How do the two, either existent or non-existent, and chairs compare?
There are three possibilities between either existence and between existence or non-existence and chair without anything that is neither.
It's easier to say there's two possibilities.
So I don't know where to go from here.
Oh, then you ask her, what is an example of both?
What is an example of both?
Both, either existent or non-existent, and chairs. What's something that is both either existent or non-existent and a chair? Yeah, she's asking you. Is there something that's either existent or non-existent and a chair?
A chair over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then?
Now, which way does the pervasion go?
Whatever is either existent or non-existent is necessarily a chair.
No. Or whatever. No. Think about it. Which way does the pervasion go? Which is the smaller group that is necessarily a member of the larger group?
Chairs.
Yeah. So whatever is a chair is either an existent
or
a non-existent. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But whatever is either existent or non-existent is not necessarily a chair.
A chair.
Yeah. Right.
Give an example of something that is a... That is either an existent or non-existent, but not a chair.
A table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is something. The item is a table.
Yeah.
Give an example of something that is neither a existent or non-existent nor a chair.
There is nothing. There is no example of anything that is neither an existence or non-existence nor a chair.
Mm-hmm. That one's a little tougher, huh? Okay, do we have another volunteer? Because that one had a compounded thing. How about doing selflessness and matter?
How do the two, selflessness and matter, compare?
There are three possibilities between selflessness, the selfless, and matter, without anything that is neither.
It follows that there are not three possibilities between selflessness and matter, without anything that is neither. Give an example of something that is both selflessness and matter.
There is something. The subject, the microphone.
Now, which way does the perversion go?
Pervasion.
Pervasion.
Everything, whatever is matter, is necessarily selfless. But whatever is the selfless is not necessarily matter.
Give an example of something that is selfless, but not matter.
There is something, a memory. Mm-hmm. A memory of the microphone.
Give an example of something that is neither selfless nor matter.
There is no example of anything that is neither selfless nor matter.
Okay. So we're still relying a lot on reading it and filling in the blanks, but not thinking about how the perfection goes. Yeah? So in this week, take the time to go through these and think yourself how the privation goes without looking at the formula, and do it yourself, and do it with your debate partner too. It makes you think, doesn't it? Yeah? But as you think about this, and you have to get these things clear, then it really helps you understand stuff. Yeah? Like in that whole thing about empty and existent and emptiness and existent, you know, those are important things to understand.